talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning and welcome to We Are Movie Geeks. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And this morning is September 28th. I wonder what happened at the box office over the weekend. I believe it was Adam Sandler versus Robert De Niro.
Oh my gosh, it was huge.
What a throwdown.
Oh yeah, and boy, did it ever. Hotel Transylvania 2 came in at a whopping $47.5 million.
I think that had to do with my positive review at We Are Movie Geeks.
Exactly.
You could have sank that film easily,
right.
But you buoyed it to new heights.
Yeah, I mean, Sony was expecting it to be number one, but not to the tune of $47.5 million. The original 2012 version opened up at $42.5 million. So this new, the sequel here set a September record as well.
Yeah, so say that the original opened around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, September, huh?
Yeah.
September record.
Exactly. So expect a third film. Expect another Hotel Transylvania. Expect another visit to the
I look forward to a
the
third
hotel.
Film. I like both of the Hotel Transylvania films.
It's keeping Jenny Tartakovsky, or I think that's his name,
from
doing Popeye. I want Popeye out there, for goodness sakes. I don't want to see another Hotel Transylvania 3.
And Sony's reveling in this because it's their third number one film in the last 4 weeks, along with War Room and Perfect Guy.
Mm. Oh,
so
yeah,
Sony's like, yeah.
Having a good fall, yeah.
At number two was The Intern from Warner Brothers at 18.2 million. That film stars Anne Hathaway and Robert De Niro. That's from and you reviewed it, Tom.
Yeah, I gave it 4 out of 5 stars.
Yeah,
I surprised myself.
It did pretty well.
It's not my genre.
Exactly. And you know, it didn't do as well as her other films, but it's still respectable. Number two, The Maze Runner brought in 14 million, continuing to drop. There is a third film coming. Number four was Everest from Universal Pictures. That brought in 13.1 million.
Now this is expansion to the regular screens besides the IMAX. It was just an IMAX last weekend, right?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Number five was Black Mass. That brought in $11.5 million. That dropped off 50%.
Yeah, that sounds
surprising.
About right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so right now its cumulative haul is $42.6 million, and Johnny Depp is still kind of in the running this early out for hopefully a Best Actor nomination. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Definitely. And as we talked at last week, definitely Golden Globe.
Oh, yeah. They'll get him there somehow.
Number six is The Visit from M. Night Shyamalan. Movie brought in $6.7 million. And number seven and number eight were from Sony Pictures, The Perfect Guy. Number eight, The War Room movie. Number nine was Tom's movie, The Green Inferno. That opened up at 1,500 locations.
That's kind of modest, isn't it? Yeah, for a release, I guess.
Yeah.
Brought in $3.5 million.
It only cost $5 million to make.
Exactly.
So it'll do fine.
So Rotten Tomatoes has it at 38%. It's a gory R-rated film.
Very gory.
Hit the festival circuit in 2013, so it's been around for a while. And as a few articles posted over the weekends, critics are trashing it.
It's not made for critics.
It's not made for critics, exactly. Number 10 was Sicario. Came in at 1.8, cracked the top 10.
Yeah. I was going to say, they were only in 6 screens last week. Did they expand it to another, 50 or 100?
59. It opened at 59 theaters, and it goes wide this weekend.
That's pretty impressive still.
Very impressive.
We're seeing that Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and Kate Marquis will be reviewing for us. Number 11 is Pawn Sacrifice. That went from 33 theaters to 781.
That's pretty strong for a movie about chess.
Yeah, I really liked it. And number 12 was Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
I just want to go back in a time machine. I wonder what was top 10 at the box office, you know, 10 years ago.
Exactly. The LA Times did a box office time machine. They posted a piece on films that were number one at the box office 10, 20, and 30 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So 30 years ago, 1985 was Back to the Future. Topped the charts for the 11th time in 12 weeks with 3.9 million. Fending off the top debut of Creator, starring Peter O'Toole.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you mean
Creator,
Back to the Future was 11 weeks at number one, huh?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
I saw Creator. It had Virginia Madsen.
Oh, yeah.
And Marielle Hemingway.
Yeah.
That wasn't one with Steve Guttenberg. That's another one I'm thinking of, I think, right? I'm trying to think who the male lead
was. Was it Craig Schaefer, maybe?
So that sounds right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll have to look that up. Creator, huh?
Plus, yeah. Back to the Future star Michael J. Fox's other hit of that year and that week, Teen Wolf, slipped to the third spot in the fifth week of release.
So he was at number one and number,
number three.
Oh.
In 1995, David Fincher's serial killer thriller Seven scored $13.9 million to outleg the soon-to-be-a-cult classic Showgirls, directed by Paul Verhoeven.
I love Showgirls.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I remember seeing that. It was one of the last films I saw at, what was the theater at near Graboid and Kings Highway there? It's long gone. It's a laundry.
Well, the Kingsland was at Graboid and Kings
Highway. Okay, that's one. It was one of the last films I saw there. I think there was only maybe about 20 of us in the audience. And we were just laughing our heads off.
A dumpy little theater.
But
have you read the recent piece, I believe it's in Entertainment Weekly, about Seven and the alternate ending and how they really had to, there were two different kind of factions going on how it would end. And it's a really good.
I've heard something about
Had
that,
a perfect ending, if you ask me.
I think so, too.
Yeah, the middle's pretty darn good, too. I remember this is one of the few films that actually really made me jump in the theater. I was thinking when they come across the guy that they think is starved to death, and he opens his eyes, and you're like, what?
And the LA Times had, at 2005, Jodie Foster's movie Flight Plan with $24.6 million. Also screening that weekend was director David Cronenberg's History of Violence, starring Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, that was a good movie.
Oh, yeah.
So it's funny to look back, you know, over the last few decades, what was, number one or what was hitting the weekend box office.
All right. Let's take our time machine back to the present day, though, and start reviewing some of these new movies. There are a bunch of new movies we have to review this.
Oh.
And let's start out with the number one movie. That was, of course, Hotel Transylvania 2.
You know who could fix the kidness? Snap. Vlad.
Hi, Dad.
Are we ready to do this?
I saw Hotel Transylvania Part 2, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. Story has Dracula, voiced by Adam Sandler, and in the first movie, his daughter, who's a vampire, gets married to a human, who's voiced by Andy Samberg. The daughter's voiced by Selena Gomez. In the sequel, they have a baby, and the whole plot of the sequel is that Dracula is worried that his baby might not be a vampire. And the daughter and the new husband are taking a trip to California because they're thinking about raising their kid in California. So they go visit Andy Samberg's parents, who are played by Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got some new characters in this film. I really like the first one, and I really like this new one. I said in my review that on paper, the script may have not looked very good. The dialogue isn't particularly funny. It was written by Robert Smigel and Adam Sandler, but there's tons of visual gags just going on, monster puns, monster visuals in the background, to the side, on the periphery, that just entertain you from beginning to end. And I think that's where its strength is probably the storyboard writers had more important input than the actual script writers.
Well, I think that the main strength is probably visual with those films. I think Jenny Tedardowski. He is very, very talented. He sort of cut his teeth over at Cartoon Network with the Powerpuff Girls and Samurai Jack. And I thought with the first Hotel Transylvania, he really brought sort of a Looney Tunes sensibility to CGI-type animation. Mm-hmm. You know, the Pixar stuff is nice, but they never really got as wild and zany as, say, Bob Clampett or, Tex Avery back in the golden age of Hollywood. And I love the character designs. Mm-hmm. I think they're really, really strong and really, good visuals.
And clearly, he and Sandler and everyone involved have an affection for the Universal monster movies. Mm-hmm. And I'm an old monster kid from way back. I certainly have an affection. And maybe that's why this appeals to me so much. I don't understand why it's not getting better reviews, frankly. I think the bar for animation with Pixar and DreamWorks sets animation so high that, a sort of mid-level animated film like this comes in and people are going to find things to dislike about it. And like I said, the script isn't particularly strong. I feel sorry for anybody who's blind and goes and sees the movie because they're not going to like it very much. But it's well worth seeing. I gave it a positive review at WeAreMovieGeeks.com, and I'm glad it's doing well.
Yeah, so let's get Jenny on the Popeye movie.
Okay. And we forgot to mention Mel Brooks shows up
as
Great Grandpa Vlad. And, of course, he's a welcome addition to any movie, and he's quite funny.
Oh, Yeah, that's great. That's great. Does Vlad look a little like the Francis Ford Coppola Dracula with the big gray?
No. They do a spoof of the Francis Ford Coppola Dracula, but that's actually Andy Samberg at the costume party. He dresses up as Gary Oldman from Coppola's Dracula.
That's funny.
But it's a funny movie, and I do recommend it. Well, number two was The Intern. Oh, yes, and I'm the only one in the room that has seen The Intern as well.
It's moments like this when you need someone you know you can count on. Because you're my
intern.
Well, I was going to say intern / best friend.
The Intern is a romantic comedy, rom-com, as we like to say, from director Nancy Meyer, whose movies I'm not a big fan of. The romantic comedy or the relationship comedy is one of my least favorite genres, and I haven't liked her films in the past. It's complicated. Something's got to give. The Holiday. I just felt that the scripts of those films were sort of at a TV-level sitcom. But I think that this new one, Nancy Meyer's best film, I think De Niro and Hathaway, who star in the film, have great chemistry. The movie's about De Niro, and he plays this 70-year-old retired widow, and he's looking for something to do, so he finds some internship program at this online clothing company run by Miss Hathaway and becomes her personal assistant in this unpaid internship. It's De Niro is really, really good in this film.
I was going to say, you said it's a rom-com. It's not De Niro and Hathaway. That's a little much.
The romance is between De Niro and Rene Russo, but I'll get to her in a minute.
But usually her go-to guy has been Jack Nicholson in the past, it's good to see. You know, I like that Robert De Niro was cast in this.
And De Niro, he plays a really sort of a kind-hearted character. This is something you see from De Niro. We're sort of used to De Niro being vulgar and angry and not so much a straight-laced character like this. I guess in the Meet the Parents movies, he was sort of that way, but that was more of a spoof of the uptight conservative. I think this is a more full-blooded character, and he's sort of a sweet performance by De Niro. Anne Hathaway is a bit less successful. I said in my review, we know that she's a tough, savvy, type A, take-charge, glass-ceiling buster because we're told so many times, but it's not what we're shown. She is adorable and funny, but she's too soft. She's too nice to be this type of character. I said she should have paid more attention to Meryl Streep when they were making The Devil Wears Prada together. Having her maybe a little more bitchy and egomaniacal at the beginning may have made her character's arc a little more satisfying, a little more interesting.
But her character is married. Does she have a kid already?
Yeah, she has a kid and she has a husband. And the husband is played by a guy named Anders Holmes. And I think I pointed him out in my review. Do you know who he is? I don't know.
Yeah, he's from the Workaholics TV show.
Okay. He's quite bad, and any scene that De Niro's not in, De Niro's in almost every scene, but any scene he's not in gets pretty bad because all that stuff is about Anne Hathaway and some of the problems she's having with her husband, and those scenes are boring. You just want De Niro to show up again. Rene Russo, who we like, shows up. She's the office masseuse, and she and De Niro have a relationship, but her part is a little underused. The first couple of scenes, she shows up for some cheap visual gags about old man sex. I wish they would have done a little more with her, maybe even a little more.
I wonder if she's taking a role that seems to be occupied these days by Mary Steenburgen, kind of played the vamp in Walk in the Woods and Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So the love interest for seniors, the AARP crowd, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Linda Lavin shows up from
Linda Lavin. Wow.
I saw that in the credits.
She's sort of this horny old gal that's trying to get De Niro in bed. And I even say that Mary Kay Place plays Anne Hathaway's mother, but you never see her on screen.
Oh, really?
You hear her talking on the phone in one scene, and I remember thinking, that woman's voice sounds familiar. And then you never see her, and then the end credits are rolling, and it says Mary Kay Place is this character. So they must have cut her scenes out, I guess.
That's too bad.
But like I say, it is a good movie. I think it's a kind of a crowd pleaser that the audience I saw it with really liked it. There's kind of a ridiculous scene where Anne Hathaway accidentally sends a mean email to her mother, and she freaks out, and she goes, what am I going to do? So De Niro goes, let's break into your mother's house and steal her computer. So he takes these young guys from the office, and they break into the house, and the police are coming, and it's very slapsticky. That seemed a little out of place, but boy, the audience was just roaring during that scene. So I guess it's a good thing they put it in there. Like I say, in my review, I say it's all cookie-cutter, warm and fuzzy, hard not to like. And while it's not a great film, it is a good one, and I do recommend it. I gave it four out of five. I was surprised.
So you could take your folks to it and not be bored out of your skull
watching.
Or embarrassed.
No.
Yes,
or offended. Yeah. So I do recommend The Intern. All right, what else opened over the weekend?
Tell us about the movie you were looking forward to.
Oh.
Green Inferno.
Green Inferno.
I cannot wait.
You know what this is? You know what they're doing to us?
Because after reading Rotten Tomatoes and I was like, cannot wait to hear what Tom thinks.
Yeah, the latest from Eli Roth. Eli Roth is an extreme director when it comes to gore and violence and torture. He did Cabin Fever, and he did both of the Hostel movies.
And he's doing Knock Knock coming up with Keanu Reeves, which is another where the two women break into the house and they...
That's a remake of Death Games.
Exactly, and that's coming out in October.
Yeah, Death Games had Sandra Locke and Colleen Camp. I love that movie. But Green Inferno is about a bunch of do-gooder college kids who decide that they need to be environmentally active, so they fly out to Peru and they chain themselves to the trees in the rainforest to stop them from the bulldozers that are going to knock them all down. And they're sort of successful at that. They're live blogging as they're doing it, so all these people over the world are watching them live as it streams. And they're quite proud of themselves as they're flying out of the Peru rainforest. But the plane crashes. About half of them are killed in the plane crash. It's a pretty harrowing plane crash scene. And then the ones that do survive are captured by the indigenous people there, who put them in a cage and immediately pull out the chubbiest guy and pull his eyeballs out and eat them and cut his tongue off and eat it and cut his limbs off and put him in the oven and cut his head off. And it's a pretty rough scene, and it is pretty shocking. But if you go to an Eli Roth movie, you got to know what to expect. Eli Roth clearly has a lot of affection for these Italian cannibal movies that came out in the 80s, early 80s, things like Cannibal Holocaust and Make Them Die Slowly and The Man from Deep River. The movie plays like an homage to those films, complete with plot points just pulled from those films as well. Like I say, it's not for everybody. It's pretty disgusting. But Eli Roth is a really good director, I think. The movie moves quickly. It's well acted. There's the lead is played by a woman named Lorenzo Izzo, who just happens to be Eli Roth's wife.
Yeah,
and she's quite good. It's scary. His movies Hostel were about college students who go to Eastern Europe and become victims of some group of people that pay to torture people. I don't think Green Inferno is actually quite as disturbing as the Hostel films, but every film I've seen that Eli Roth has directed has been a pretty darn good horror film.
Well, as I understand, the people in Cannibal Holocaust are all kind of jerks, but I guess in this one they're really not that bad. They're a little pretentious, but
They're eco warriors, and it doesn't make them look very good. I think the tagline is "No good deed goes unpunished." So here they are. There's even a scene where they're tree huggers, but one gets impaled on a tree. there's some sort of ironic gags like that.
So I'm assuming you would call this a hard R.
Oh yeah, definitely. And there's another scene where they have some marijuana and they feed it to the cannibals, thinking it'll make them fall asleep. Well, what it does, it gives them the munchies. So you don't want to know what happens from there. There's a scene straight out of Walking Dead. If you have a strong stomach and you like that kind of horror movie, I'm tired of these tame horror movies, like Poltergeist and Annabelle and a lot of movies that have come out, the horror movies that have come out this year. So if you want something sort of hardcore, I do recommend Green Inferno. A couple other movies opened this weekend that we have already seen. Jim has seen Coming Home, a Chinese film. Jim, tell us about Coming Home.
Well, the title doesn't refer to the old Jane Fonda, John Voight film. This is something completely different. It's a nice, quiet film. It's set in China during the height of Mao Zedong and that era there. It concerns his family. The father is imprisoned because he was a rightist, and at the start of the film, he escapes, and it's brought to the attention of the fellow's wife and his teenage daughter, who's trying to get a lead role in this ballet. And you see a lot of shots of the ballet with these ballerina types dancing around with rifles and acting like they're throwing grenades. The ballet is a tribute to the soldier warrior woman, and they're concerned that this escaped guy is going to try to contact his family, and without giving away too much, he does attempt to, but he's taken away. Years passed, the Cultural Revolution has occurred, and they release him from jail, comes back home, is greeted by his daughter, and then goes to his home to see his wife, and she doesn't know who he is. She has gotten some sort of psychosomatic amnesia, and she refuses to believe that, he's her husband. She thinks he's some sort of tormentor that she's encountered. And the rest of the film, it's kind of, you know, has elements of The Notebook and all that. He's trying to find some way to prod her memory, either by music or by old photographs or by food, to try to get her to recall. And it's the woman is played, the mother in it is played by Gong Li, and it's very moving, and it's a, you know, nice kind of character study, a look at this culture, and you know, it might get considered a best foreign film, you know, nominee maybe by the end of the year. It's it's, you know, a quiet, you know, film, but it's very well done, and you know, the atmosphere is really great in it, the sets and, you know, all the costumes and all that, and it's a heartbreaker.
Okay. So you're going to review that this Thursday evening at wearemoviegeeks.com. How many stars are you going to give it, Jim?
I'm maybe going to give it maybe 3.5 or 4. I you know, it's good. Yeah.
And what's interesting is it was shown last year at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Okay,
so in 2014, people. So, I mean, this has been a while, you know, with Sony Classics.
Yeah. So
3.5 or 4 stars, which is about 3 stars more than you gave to Stonewall.
Oh, man.
You know, Jim and I saw Stonewall last week.
There is no hope. There is no family, Danny.
I like being mad.
These kids have nothing left to lose.
That's not the way, Danny.
It's the only way.
Hey, so we're having a parade to commemorate the fighting. I'm going to call it the Gay Liberation March.
I'm coming.
It's a train wreck on many, many levels. Stonewall was a name of a restaurant or a bar in New York, and in 1969, they had these, what were known as the Stonewall Riots, where the gay men and women who hung out at Stonewall and in that neighborhood were tired of the vice squad and the police coming and busting their heads for being homosexual, so they couldn't take it anymore, and they rose up and they had a big riot. And Stonewall, the movie, is sort of told through the eyes of a young man. You take it from there.
Well, it's a fictional. It's one of those films kind of like Ragtime or even Titanic, in which they take a real event and they stick some fictional characters into it. And the trouble is, the fictional characters aren't interesting. This fellow Danny, who's played by Jeremy Irvine, who we might remember from the War Horse, and he's done a few films, A Woman in Black 2 he was in. It's, you know, he's just not a very interesting guy. We see in flashbacks that he was part of the football team. Yeah. His dad was the coach. Yeah. And,
in Indiana, no less.
Yeah. And it looks like Smallville from the first Richard Donner Superman.
And it's not bad enough that his dad is like this sort of narrow-minded conservative, but he's also the football coach.
And his kid sister is super supportive and way too sophisticated. Yeah. You know, it's over dialogue, talking about Truman Capote and things like that. And it's kind of ridiculous. You know, this is a film. It's tough to critique because you don't want to seem like you're coming down on the LGBT community, but it seems like they're the ones right now that are having the biggest problem with the film because of its sort of twisting of history, and the Danny is sort of taken in by these group of street hustlers when he first gets into New York City, and they're all these really screaming, you know, very flamboyant divas, and it gets kind of tiring after a while.
Yeah.
And then a couple of his sexual encounters, I mentioned in my review, the first guy he meets on Christopher Street is this heavily made-up queen that pretty much propositions him at this diner, and he's just kind of creepy and scary. And then later on, I think I mentioned that it was reminiscent of the Kenneth MacMillan Baron character from Dune, this overly made-up middle-aged queen that's just really scary, just a frightening thing.
And he cries. Danny, he becomes sort of a street hustler at one point, and During his first encounter there, he cries. And then he goes to a second encounter, and he cries some more. But then all of a sudden, he's like, gay power! He becomes this very strong-voiced protester.
Well, that's because he meets an attractive guy that's played by Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, I think is his name. Yeah.
The Tudors.
Yeah. And he's the sort of slick rabble-rouser that's all talk and no action. Yeah. And he's basically using his position to pick up young guys, I think.
I mean, is it mostly from the screenplay? I mean, I'm seeing the screenwriters done mostly television. Yeah, John Robin Bates.
Well, it's just, I'm sure it was, it was Roland's decision. Well, he directs with a sledgehammer with this thing.
It's an ugly film, too, I thought. I read one review that thought the Stonewall Neighborhood, the Stonewall Neighborhood sort of stylized. It looks like a big set, and one review said it looked like Sesame Street with the lights out.
That's good. I like that. Yeah, well, there's a whole scene. Well, it ends with the first gay pride parade, and you could practically tell it was shot, with green screen, and it just looks phony.
Yeah. And these poor gays, I mean, they're oppressed and they're getting beaten up by the police. And if that's not bad enough, Judy Garland dies like right in the middle of it. They cut to this headline. It says Judy Garland found dead.
Well, that's their big fight. And it seems like these hustlers, when they're not, getting in a guy's cars, they're just sitting on the cobblestones there and on the corner arguing about who's better, Judy or Barbara. But they're just so stereotyped, it's just exhausting.
And it's hard to have a whole lot of sympathy for them. I mean, what the police were doing was wrong, but it was another time. But the one character is introduced like throwing a brick through a window to steal something.
That really offended me. It's like, he's kind of a scamp, and here I'm going to take what I want because I'm oppressed.
Another thing that really bothered me, at the end, when you have the riot, now the movie's about the Stonewall riot, but the riot is like 10 minutes of this 2-hour-long, 10-minute movie. But they've got these Vice Squad guys, and they're trapped in the Stonewall restaurant, right? And all the gays are outside having their riot. Well, they start burning down the restaurant, and they're squirting the wood doors with lighter fluid. Now, what was their goal? Were they going to burn these guys alive and kill them? It sure seemed like it until a busload of police reinforcements show up. But it looked like there was attempted murder of these Vice Squad guys. What they were doing was wrong, but they were doing their jobs. These weren't even the cops that were shown beating them earlier in the film. These were a couple of real-life characters.
Yeah, the deputy is kind of sympathetic. He knows that there's a lot of corruption down there, and he knows that the Stonewall Inn is run by the mob, and he knows that they're paying off the cops. And they introduced one of the few familiar faces we have in there is Ron Perlman, and that's quite a nice face.
I like him.
But he's playing this ominous thug that's just kind of drifting through and looking kind of scary through most of the film.
It sounds like Roland Emmerich has problems going between the genres like of 2012 and White House Down, but then he does a movie like Anonymous, which was not well received. He's got Independence Day Resurgence coming up, followed by maybe a remake of Stargate. So when he kind of goes, when he veers away from the action films,
I guess I read a little bit about the controversy. Maybe you know a little more about this, Tom. But from what I skimmed this morning, I guess they have a problem with the fact that Danny is the one that starts the riot when it was actually a transgender black woman that did it.
But nobody really knows who started the riot. There's actually very few photos of that riot. Every gay that was living in New York at that time probably claims they were there at that riot. Yeah, they're saying it was whitewashed, that the transvestites and the gay people of color and brown and black skinned aren't at the forefront of the movie. Well, part of that just has to do with box office. Roland Emmerich can make any movie he wants. I wish he made a better movie, but that's not why the movie is bad. It's told through the eyes of this clean-cut kid from Indiana. It sort of reminded me, there's a little controversy with Glory, which was about black soldiers in the Civil War, yet the main character was their white leader, played by Matthew Broderick. But at least in Stonewall, the kid was gay. If the kid was straight, maybe I could understand the problem they were having with it. But they're calling for a boycott, and I think they're shooting themselves in the foot. The fact is, the studio put up the money and made this film, and just because these guys are boycotting it and it's going to lose money, They're not going to go out and make another gay-themed film where transvestites and black transvestites are at the front. They're just not going to make gay films.
Well, I think it's another – I think I touched on this a little bit. It's one of those good-intention films like Tomorrowland that was getting some of its few positive reviews because it was wanting to be optimistic. And I don't think you should give a film a pass for its good intentions. Yeah. You know, judge it for the dramatic structure, how well it's made. And, you know, don't boycott this because you don't like the fact that, you know, Danny's the one, you know, shown throwing the brick. This boycott, just stay away because it's a bad movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's just badly done. This story is important. It deserves to be told, but it's maybe just
better.
Not told well
there,
in this. But
there are more films coming out for the rest of the, you know, we have Freeheld coming out.
Yeah. And Danish Girl.
Danish Girl.
But they're kind of, in some ways they're kind of wrong because there was plenty of black and Latino and women, you know, butch lesbians, and there was a lot of these kind of characters.
Film. I think the fact that the prominent lesbian in it, I think is her character name is Sam, when she's getting, she kind of instigates the riots because she's getting hauled away by the police and trying to run away from them, and she yells to the crowd, "Somebody do something!" And it's like she's wanting to be rescued or something, and that this is their rescuing of her. And I was like, it's a little much, I think, you know. It's just a long 2 hours, and you know, it's like these you know, these hustlers just screaming in your face the whole time, and it's just exhausting.
It's going to lose a lot of money. Apparently, it opened in 1,500 theaters and made a couple hundred thousand dollars, something like that. You know, and if the homosexual audiences aren't going to see it, no one's going to go see it.
I mean, it didn't even make the chart for Rentrak. I mean, there were other movies I've never even heard of that were on there.
Yeah.
Hitman Agent 47 was still on there making money. Yeah. I don't see Stonewall anywhere.
Yeah. But like I say, don't support it because you are supportive of the people or the cause. You know, I mean, you know, just don't go to it because it's lousy.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a couple of documentaries made about Stonewall that are pretty good. You can probably go track those down somewhere and see that instead of the Roland Emmerich's Stonewall. A well-intentioned failure, but a failure nonetheless. And Jim and I do not recommend Stonewall. But Jim saw The Martian.
Yay.
Now you can either accept that or you can get to work.
This will come as quite a shock to my crewmates and to NASA and to the entire world. But I'm still alive. Surprise.
So, Jim, tell us about The Martian.
Okay.
You're the only one in the room that's seen it.
Okay.
That is Ridley Scott's new film with Matt Damon.
Okay, I guess I can go ahead and without, you know, 20th Century Fox banging on the door here.
Film Festival. It's already screened at Film Festival.
I can tell you about this movie. I can, you know, there's been some reviews out, and I can say that this is one of the year's best films. This is fantastic. This I would put right up with, I would say, the pinnacle of Ridley Scott's film career. I'd put it right up there with Alien, with Blade Runner. It's superb. I believe that Matt Damon should be a front runner for Best Actor. This is one of his best performances ever. I've always complimented him about how well he works with actresses and how he connects with them, has a good chemistry, like with Emily Blunt and the Appointment Bureau, I believe it was called, and with Bryce Dallas Howard in Hereafter. And here he's mostly by himself, but I remarked afterwards, like, if you're gonna be alone on Mars with somebody, you can't do much better than Matt Damon because he is so charming in this film, and his character is so heroic. This is a superhero that uses his brains instead of an iron suit or a fast car or whatever. He never wallows in self pity when he realizes the situation he's in. He gets to work. And this is great. There's not, you know, Mars is just kind of shown as you know, like the college where he works, or, you know, if he was at sea, this is the ocean around him. This is just his environment. There's not, you know, that you're not awed by the majesty of it all. It's really impressive, you know, how they've depicted Mars in this. But you also get the people on the ground at NASA, and Jeff Daniels, very good as the head of NASA, and there's also his old crew that thinks he's dead, and they're terrific. Michael Pena, Sebastian Stan, Kate Mara, coming back off of two duds.
Yeah.
You know, she's in a good film now.
It's a miracle.
And I hear the script. It's based on Andy Weir's great, fantastic novel, which I absolutely love. I have read three times, which I rarely do.
Well, I want to leave out the captain of the ship, though.
Yeah.
Jessica Chastain. Terrific.
And
wonderful
the script by Drew Goddard. So, I mean, yeah. The book is so fantastic. It would have been hard to really mess up this film.
Yeah. But I can say this is superb. We talk about films with good intentions. Well, this is the film that kind of Tomorrowland was wanting. This is the film that I think Interstellar wanted to be. Mm-hmm. This is a science, not science fiction, but a sort of science reality. It's only a few years in the future. But it shows people shows audiences that intelligence is really something to strive for, mm-hmm. and even though it is set in a sort of science fiction background, it has a full beating heart to it.
NASA's been on board.
There's a decision that has to be made, and instead of going with the logical, the scientific, they go for what they feel in their heart. And will lift you up. It's just a terrific film from beginning to end.
Are you reviewing it for Weird Movie?
Yeah.
Sounds like you can give it 5 stars, Jim.
Oh, if I could give it a few more, I would.
Well, we'll let you.
Okay.
We're not strict on that kind of thing. All right, so The Martian opens Friday, and Jim liked it a lot. Oh. So I guess, Michelle, when are you going to see The Martian?
Actually, we have another screening, which we gave contest passes away for, so we will be seeing that tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I hope I didn't build it up too much.
Had read the reviews out of the Toronto Film Festival, where, and they're talking, that's got some Oscar buzz. They're talking Oscar buzz for Matt Damon as well.
Right. Well, Michelle and I will offer our views on The Martian next week. Another movie that opens this Friday, besides The Martian, Sleeping with Other People, starring Jason Sudeikis and Alison Brie.
My therapist suggested that I attend a program for love addiction.
No, listen.
Sam, I cheated on you.
Was it my brother?
You know I'm not attracted to your brother.
Who is better than my brother?
I'll be reviewing it at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. It's a lame comedy. I think you mentioned last week it was like When Harry Met Sally, which is sort of true. It's about this couple that become friends in college, and then it jumps ahead 13 years, and they're in different relationships. But it's like When Harry Met Sally, if Harry and Sally talked about nothing else except sex.
Well, they re-meet or reunite at a sex addicts meeting, and actually their first meeting, which we see in college, is a one-night stand.
Yeah.
And I think they're the first for each of them, as I recall.
Yeah, you're right. They meet again 13 years later at a sex addiction therapy meeting, but that's played for laughs. There's been a couple of movies about sex addiction. Choke with Sam Rockwell.
Thanks for sharing.
But those two movies, they weren't particularly good, but they treated the subject of sex addiction seriously. This one just throws the sex addiction in as a kind of a meet cute place for this couple.
And there's so many rom-com cliches in there.
The gay best friend, who's played by Allison.
Natasha Lyonne.
Natasha Lyonne, that's right.
Yes, who's Allison Brie's best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, Jason Sudeikis' character has a buddy there. I forget the actor's name, but he's married. He's got a kid. And of course, he's living vicariously through his buddy. Jason's sort of smitten with his boss at work, who's played by Amanda Peet.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just kind of a nothing character for her.
Yeah.
And Adam Scott is playing the first love of Alison Brie, and he's already married, and she's got a thing for him, and she's taking booty calls from him.
Yeah.
And he's got this weird sort of porn mustache, and he's doing this sort of
he's a gynecologist, of course.
Nerdy character, and it's just weird.
Alison Brie was okay. I mean, she's sort of charming and sort of vulnerable. Yeah. I thought Jason Sudeikis was less successful. He just delivered every line in that sort of smug stand-up comedian.
Sort of rat-a-tat-tat wise guy, and always got to come back and quip.
He works well in ensemble comedies like Horrible Bosses, but he's had to carry this film, and I don't think he's very good.
What do you think about the kids' birthday party scene where they decide to so we're going to go to this kid's birthday party, but we're bringing Molly with us. We're going to take some ecstasy.
Yeah, they took some ecstasy, and then she's dancing around like she's working at a
like in her bikini top, yeah,
like
for
that.
The kids.
I didn't get that scene at all.
And it's like, you know, the parents got no problem with it. Oh, I wish I was that free. I wish I could take drugs again.
Yeah.
I was like, really? Come on, man. Yeah. It's just a bump in the careers of some very talented people that'll go on to do better things.
Not a good film at all.
No.
So that opens Friday. I will be reviewing that at wearemoviegeeks.com. So look for my review of that this Thursday evening. A lot of movies open Friday. Good grief. We have a lot of movies to review and preview, don't we? Jim and Michelle are seeing The Walk tonight.
Welcome to New York. Anything to declare?
I'm going to hang a high wire between the two towers of the World Trade Center and walk on it.
Good luck.
The Walk stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt with a French accent.
Yeah, Robert Zemeckis directed the film, I believe, yes.
And it's based on a true story about this French guy that came. Was it the Twin Towers? Is that what
Yes. Was it Man on a Wire? Was that the Oscar-winning documentary
that he was
the subject of? Yeah.
And it also opened up on Saturday. It was the opening film for the New York Film Festival, and it just received rave reviews. So Alan Silvestri does the score, which I've been listening to over the weekend. Fantastic score. I hope he gets some Oscar love for the score.
Who's reviewing this one?
I think Kate is supposed
Kate
to,
Marquee
right?
will Kate be Marquee. Reviewing.
And her review, I guess, will go up Tuesday evening. Since it opens on Wednesday.
Is it just doing IMAX on Wednesday and then opening to wide on the 9th?
Correct. We're seeing it on IMAX tonight.
Oh, buddy.
And we've had contest passes for
that. What do you think about Joseph Gordon-Levitt's French accent?
It's passable, I suppose.
The early review said once you kind of get past the first couple minutes of it.
It's a little jarring in the trailer.
Right.
A little Le Pew in there. Hello.
And I guess Wednesday night, we're seeing Sicario.
Every day across that border, people are killed with his blessing. To find him would be like discovering a vaccine.
Nothing will make sense to your American ears.
But in the end, you will understand.
Really looking forward to that.
Emily Blunt and Denis Villeneuve.
Is the director,
Prisoners.
I believe it's written by one of the stars of Sons of Anarchy.
Enemy was another film he directed with Jake Gyllenhaal, which I really liked.
And Josh Brolin and Benicio del Toro are getting some good buzz from this movie. But Emily Blunt.
Getting a little typecast in these roles as Mexican drug connection guys, as wasn't he just in the movie about Pablo Escobar?
And he was in Savages, of course.
He does those roles well, so
and Josh does the hard case cops very well too.
Yeah, so that looks really good.
Yeah,
we'll be reviewing that, and Kate's reviewing that one as well.
Sicario, she is.
Kate Marquee will be reviewing that at wearemoviegeeks.com, and Travis will be reviewing another movie that opens Friday called Finders Keepers. This is a documentary. This is a weird story. This guy was at a garage sale and he bought a grill, and he gets home with this grill and opens it up to clean it out, and there's a human leg inside the grill.
Yeah. Bomb leg, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So he puts the leg on display and becomes like this tourist stop or something. I don't know.
It sounds off the wall. I think one of the directors is the guys is one of the fellows that did the King of Kong.
The Donkey Kong
documentary is really good.
Yeah,
so,
I've seen that. It's excellent.
He said it's really well done. He really liked the film.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, good. So that's something to look forward to. Our colleague Michael Hafner is at Fantastic Fest. We've heard from Michael, haven't we, Michelle?
We have, and he's also on Twitter at MP Hafner. So follow his Twitter feed. He's been putting out reviews on Twitter, like, you know, little quips. But he's also posting his reviews up on the site. He has seen the secret screening. Anybody who knows Fantastic Fest, it's known for its secret screening like around opening night. And rumors were flying on Friday that it would be Star Wars The Force Awakens.
No way.
Well, some of their past secret screenings have just been like, you know, heads have exploded type thing. Another strong rumor was Hateful Eight. However, he did see Crimson Peak, which just received going back to your horror movies, in the ratings recently, this one has received an R rating. So that's Guillermo del Toro. That stars Jessica Chastain,
Tom Hiddleston,
Loki.
The Mia Wasikowski.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The trailers look gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
So
he really...
In.
He really liked it, but they were all, the press was told you cannot, you know, he's kind of given us a good preview of it, but he really, really liked it. And he said it really works for him. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, he's got, they also showed The Lobster. The Lobster is screened at Fantastic Fest mm-hmm. and at the New York Film Festival. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of a way to reacquaint audiences with these films.
Mm-hmm. And he's put a review of The Lobster up at WeAreMovieGeeks.com already.
He has. And he's also done another movie, which is received a lot of acclaim, High Rise.
Oh, yeah.
By Ben Wheatley.
With Tom Hiddleston. Exactly. Again. Yeah, exactly. There you go.
So, yeah, there's a lot going on. I mean, you got Fantastic Fest going on. Michael's covering that. You've also got the New York Film Festival, which opening night, like we said, was The Walk. So, yeah, there's a lot going on now. You know, it's Oscar season. We're in full gear.
I was
going to
say, is that Hank Williams Jr. film coming out before the end of the year? So Tom will have another one?
Yeah.
It's like three big, you know, fall mm-hmm. movies. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, he's an actor with a lot of heat.
Very talented. He makes that Loki character so entertaining in the mm-hmm. Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. So.
Plus, Steven Spielberg's Bridge of Spies is also going to be shown at the New York Film Festival, which we will be seeing this week.
Yeah, we're going to see Thursday. Yeah, mm-hmm. Is that scheduled to open in October or November? Mm-hmm. October
They're
sometime?
Trying to,
yeah.
you know, Disney, DreamWorks is trying to build on that whole, like what they did with Lincoln a few years ago, how mm-hmm. it kind of had a slow rollout, was shown at the New York Film Festival, and then, you know, became the Oscar movie.
Yeah.
All right, we'll have Michael on next week and talk about his trip to Austin for Fantastic Fest. So that's something to look forward to. Jim liked The Martian a lot. Really, he says it's one of the great movies about space travel and what is out there. Mm-hmm. One of the worst movies about what is out there is Plan 9 from Outer Space. Ed Wood's 1959 masterwork.
Or masterwork.
Yeah, we'll be playing this Thursday evening at Schlafly Bottleworks over in Maplewood starting at 7 o'clock. It is a fundraiser for Helping Kids Together, a worthy cause.
Oh, yeah.
But Plan 9 from Outer Space is a whole heck of a lot of fun.
And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future.
Oh, it's a blast.
It was made in 1959, and it stars Bela Lugosi.
Oh.
Yet Bela Lugosi died in 1956, so what's going on there?
Oh, so they, as I understand, he just shot this footage of Bela outside his home, mostly, although we do see him in the cemetery and coming out of the crypt and all that.
There's just two scenes with Lugosi. One, he's standing at the cemetery, and then there's a voiceover that says, his wife died, and he's crying at her funeral. and then there's another shot where he walks out his front door, walks out of frame towards his driveway, and then you hear this car tire squealing and crashing. Oh, now he's dead.
So
that was it for Lugosi. He died then right after they filmed that, and so they brought in somebody to play his character,
who is Ed Wood's wife's chiropractor.
And he was, you know, several inches taller than Lugosi and didn't look anything like Lugosi, and he walks around holding his cape up over his nose. Tor Johnson is terrific. Tor Johnson, I think, like knocks over some of the cardboard tombstones.
I'm big boy Johnny.
Vampira.
This is
her signature film.
Who wisely, decided she wasn't going to do any of the bad dialogue, mm-hmm. so she was spared that. She makes an interesting screen presence in it. But, it does have the pie plate looking flying saucers over Hollywood, and it's so ridiculous.
And, of course, Tim Burton's Ed Wood, which was made in 94, covers in depth the making of Plan 9 from Outer Space.
My favorite Tim Burton film.
Mine as well. And actually, A Film Series, which is going to be showing Plan 9 this Thursday, next month they're going to show Ed Wood. I think this is sort of a warm-up for Ed, which is, I think it'd make a good double feature, actually.
Oh, yeah. It's terrific. Well, both films are terrific.
Yeah, Plan 9 from Outer Space is terrible, but it's a whole lot of fun. I mean, it just moves like lightning. You just laugh and laugh. It may be the funniest bad movie ever made.
More fun than a ball in Albuquerque.
There you go. So that's this Thursday at Schlafly Bottleworks. This Sunday at the History Museum, they are showing Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing.
Morning, Miss Mother Sister.
Now, Mookie, don't work too hard today. The man says it's going to be hot as the devil.
I've been here 25 years, and Sal's famous pizzeria is here to stay.
Trust me.
Mookie, the last time I trusted you, we ended up with a son. Can't
stand it. Hey, Sal, I'm getting the brothers on the wall here.
You want brothers on the wall? Get your own place. You can do what you want to do.
Actually, Spike Lee's in town right now. He's speaking at Webster University tonight.
Wow.
And the tickets for that sold out immediately. I think they had them available to the students and faculty, and by the time there was some left over for the public, they sold out in a heartbeat. I would have liked to have gone to that, but I'm going to Taylor Swift anyway. but Cinema St. Louis will be sponsoring a screening of Do the Right Thing this Sunday night, which will be October 4th at 6 o'clock at the Missouri History Museum. Michelle, you've seen Do the Right Thing, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I saw it when it first came out, at the theater, and everyone was all paranoid that, man, the theaters will be in flames and riots. It never happened, Come on.
It's really a great movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's Spike Lee's masterpiece. I even think it's one of the best movies of the 90s, even though it was made in 89. John Turturro's amazing. Danny Aiello,
he's fantastic.
Is Sal, the pizzeria owner, who's just trying to run his business in this part of town and what he's up against. Who else is in it?
Giancarlo Esposito. Yeah. John Savage has a real brief role in it.
Bill Nunn is Radio Raheem.
Oh, yeah.
You've got Samuel L. Jackson there.
Is the DJ. And Ozzie Davis and Ruby Dee, I believe.
Dumb Air and Mother Sister.
Yeah,
Of their characters.
Yeah, Robin Harris is one of the guys sitting at the street corner commenting on everything.
Sweet Dick Willie.
That's right.
They all have great names. And Richard Edson, I believe, plays John Turturro's brother. Turturro's angry and says a lot of racist things in the film, but at the same time, you have a lot of sympathy for his character. Richard Edson plays kind of the dumber, sweeter brother. I've seen Do the Right Thing many, many times, and every time I see it, I see something new that I haven't noticed before. It's a great, great movie. And I think they're trying to tie it into the whole Ferguson thing. Ferguson, of course, is the race riots that have happened in St. Louis here in the past year. And there is a race riot at the end of Do the Right Thing. And not only that, there's a white cop played by Danny Aiello's son, Rick Aiello, who kills one of the black characters. And it's sort of a gray area of whether he kills this character on purpose or not. It's almost an accidental death, but it leads to this riot. And I guess some people think that it sort of pertains to what's going on here in St. Louis.
Actually, it's pretty similar to, I guess, the Eric Garner incident that happened in the New York area. Was it Long Island that happened to? One of that area there that where he was selling the illegal cigarettes and was gotten a chokehold.
There's a bunch of people that are going to be speaking about Do the Right Thing at the History Museum, including our friend Calvin Wilson from the Post-Dispatch. And I don't have the names of the other people with me, but
Tiffany Sean.
Yeah, some sort of local activists. We'll be talking about the movie, and I'm sure they're going to talk about Ferguson. And
Stonewall kind of wants to be the Do the Right Thing for the LGBT community, and it doesn't work. Spike Lee's character Mookie tosses the trash can through the window, and then Danny and Stonewall is the first to toss a brick at the Stonewall and all that.
So. It was nominated for Best Screenplay for Spike Lee, and he did not win. And it was also nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Danny Aiello. He lost to Denzel Washington for Glory. We were just talking about Glory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I thought Danny Aiello did a great job.
Oh, yeah. It's a terrific film. It's definitely one of the best films of the 80s or early 90s.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so happy that Spike Lee is coming for this evening.
But I heard he's not doing anything. I talked to the guy over at Webster. He's not visiting any classes.
No, I think it's just more
maybe talk and possibly do a Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Spike Lee. I liked Old Boy. That's on Netflix.
Yeah,
I know you didn't like Old Boy.
Yeah, I was going to say you're one of the only fans of that.
I've watched that movie like four times.
But Josh Brolin is good in it. We were talking about Josh being in Sicario. He's good.
Yeah. This Friday and Saturday night over at the Tivoli at the Real Late Show at midnight, they've got Let the Right One In.
Oh, that's great.
That is the Swedish version of about a little 13-year-old vampire girl. Quite a good film.
Yeah, I enjoyed Let Me In, but I have to say I think I like the original a little bit better.
Yeah, I like them both about the same. It's really a scene-for-scene remake.
Yeah, and I was shocked with the English-language remake that they sort of retained the ending from the Swedish version because it was so brutal. I was like, no way Hollywood's going to do that. Yeah. And they did it. They did it even more brutal, I think.
So that's this Friday and Saturday night.
I should mention we lost a few people last week or so. We lost Jack Larson, mostly known as Jimmy Olsen, but I believe he was one of the producers of Urban Cowboy, the movie with John Travolta. And of course, he was in Superman Returns. And,
And he was a gay activist as well, right?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. And Marty Milner the week before, mostly known for television, but he's in a bona fide classic. He's part of the cast of Sweet Smell of Success, which is just one of the greatest films ever.
Well, next week we'll be back with reviews of Sicario and The Walk and maybe some other stuff. So we've got to sign off for now. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
Listen to us again. We are Movie Geeks next week.
Black leather, rock.
Black leather, hello, darling.
Hey.
Black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather, rock.